Hi, we just kind of made this up. I'm back with Paul again.
Hello, hello. Good to be back with you, Clay.
Yeah, it's wonderful, man. Got such a good response from the last talk. We wanted to keep going.
Sure, sure. Happy to.
And so, education, learning, especially homeschooling, has been fresh on my mind, and how to get my son the best education. I've been thinking a lot about that.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll say my own upbringing was I went to a small Catholic school for 8 years, and then high school, 1,600 kids, huge school. So it's a huge shock, size, culture, everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that experience gave me maybe a unique perspective or a different perspective than, say, kids who had gone through large schools, and it was just one grade to another, no difference. But for me, I was like, wow, this place is crazy. It's like immoral, you know, like nobody really cares. The teachers are just letting the kids, you know, it's like the, what's the analogy? The inmates are running the asylum.
Oh, wow.
Like it just felt crazy to me. It was so different.
Yeah.
And so that was a big shock. And then learning how to dress myself and do my hair and all these cultural things that had nothing to do with learning, or maybe culture is the wrong word, but like pop culture things.
Yeah.
Trying to fit in.
Oh, right.
That kind of stuff.
And, yeah.
So the emphasis on learning went out the window. It's more like, how do I survive? Fit in? Yeah, like be cool. I want to be cool. I want to get the chicks, like that, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I gravitated towards the jocks, being an athlete.
And, okay.
And I'm not sure if that served me in the long run. Like I might have been better off hanging out with the smart guys or the so-called nerds or the dorks or whatever.
Mm.
And so
yeah.
I just wanted to start there. Mm. And hear, you know, your own experience with education and maybe how you learn, or and then how you we're both teachers, so we'll get into how we teach.
Yeah, thank you for that frame. I love the topic, education. From what I understand, I like to do etymology. So educate comes from ducere, which I think means to lead.
Mm-hmm.
Like to induce, to lead. And then X is out, to lead out, to bring out.
Right? I like that.
So that's cool. in terms of just to open up with that, is that perhaps we have a kind of innate, intrinsic intelligence just by virtue of, you know, you can say species, right? Living on this planet for, you know, a long time, let's just say. And that instead of education as imposing, right?
Top down.
Top down, outside in even, right? To push in, right? A remembrance of the, this is Latin, etymology is to bring out, to lead out, right? And I think that fits for me in both my path as a student. I also went to a Christian school for I think about 4 or 5 years. When my family, because of my dad's job, he lost his job in the 80s, he found a job in Taiwan. I grew up in the States, Western education, mostly in Chicago, and then we moved back to Taiwan. Different educational culture, influenced by, I would say, Confucian philosophy, which is about sort of the matrix of social relationships, the father fathers, the mother mothers, the sons sons, right? The son doesn't try to be the parent, and the parent doesn't try to be, you know, best friends with the child, right? So there's this sort of understanding one's role. Some would say hierarchical, but I mean, if the role of the parents is to educate, right, the child, right, there's a virtue there. It's not just to try to control or punish. And then sort of if they are worthy elders, right, then the role of a junior, or it could be like older brother, younger brother, or child to a parent, is you know, the filial piety, obedience, in the sense of because they're trusted as elders who have the wisdom, right? That falls apart. Like in our previous episode, if they're just older and not elder, then I wouldn't be obedient to those who actually maybe don't carry the wisdom, you know, or have some other kind of agenda or propaganda than my best well-being. Right.
The other half of the bargain is they have to show up and be wise. They can't just...
Otherwise, obedience is not the virtue. It's maybe a vice. Right? And so So I have a lot of frames. I would say I started formally teaching in 1997, and as of the recording, that's 29 years, so almost completing my third decade of teaching in different capacities. It actually started with martial arts. That's something we share. The teacher at the time was going to move away, and either we stopped the class, or he's like, okay, I'm going to leave in 6 months. If any of you want to step up, you know, to be the group leader, then, you know, we'll do private lessons and train them up to par. And everyone was looking around and say, hey, Paul. I was like, me? Because I was very shy and introverted. Still am, by essence. But teaching the passion of learning, in this case, the martial arts, wow, it made me feel so energized. You know, before the recording, I was sharing some of my understandings of the somatic, even somatopsychic benefits of martial training. And so I became very passionate. It brought out something in me. And then I started teaching, very shy, but started to explain things. And I realized I really love, it was almost addictive, like in a sort of compassion, right? When I feel that the students were also tasting what I tasted, you know? So my passion shared, and the compassion of witnessing my students like get turned on by the by the training. And then I realized, well, I actually kind of have a knack for it too. Maybe that's the base of it, you know, like the feeling, you actually enjoy the transmission process, right? I'm not like, oh, I'm just passing on this information. I guess there's also a gradient, back to like traditional educational context, there's a gradient, like you never called your teacher by their first name, like it's always professor or teacher. So. In the martial context, we have these titles like Sifu, right? Or even among the students, right? If you entered the school, last week, and I entered the school this week, you're my older brother, right? Sishong, right? And so, as the elder, as the senior, you take care of me, and I listen to you, right? There's that reciprocity. So it's very, very simple, kind of ancient. I think, like what I understand with maybe, we call it homeschooling now, but like. Back in the day, it was like the siblings, right? Or the village, right? The old, if you were a seven-year-old, you helped educate, right? The five-year-old, and it was very practical, right? And it was part of that kind of, that kind of community. I guess the frame, there's several frames I guess I could share. Maybe like modes of learning, right? And therefore, as pedagogy, I have a lot of alliteration and these kind of maps, and often they are like trinities, right? So I have three V's. And the three V's, which I think you relate to because, of our previous conversation, and in no particular order, but let's just say you have 10 students, and maybe the first modality, the first V you apply is verbal, explanatory, which is more rational logic, the theory. And you're saying whatever subject it is, right? Blah, blah, blah. And then maybe two students get it. They get the main import of the curriculum. But the other eight are like, over the head, beside, in one ear, out the other ear, whatever. So if that's your only modality as a transmitter, then you're missing 80% of the students.
Think that's how, like, certain people learn verbally, or is it, or some, what, like, why are only two getting it is my question.
Yeah, so 20%, and it could vary. In some cultures, maybe it's 50%, so it's just, I'm just kind of giving this frame. I think, one way is just like, maybe, psychosocial or neuro-linguistic development. Some people, through the, and verbal is actually very linear, right? A, B, C, D, at least English, right? So very, maybe more left-brained, and maybe they have the Broca and Wernicke areas of the temporal lobe, these verbal processing and transmitting centers quite developed, right? And for whatever reason, due to nutrition or injury, some people don't develop that as strongly. So when you try to use words, they're like, maybe they think they understand, right? But when rubber meets the road of application, they're like, no, they actually didn't get it. So I'll throw in another V, which is visual, right? Uh-huh. And so a lot of people say, oh, visual learner, right? Yeah. And I've heard some people, they can't visualize, So if you tell the student, okay, imagine a bridge, they're like, what? And so, but for some people, say, maybe four out of the remaining eight people, students, when you show them, instead of like trying to describe, like, let's just say building a bridge, okay, you need these structures and this, you're like, oh, you just draw a picture. And they're like, oh, okay, why didn't you draw, you
know? Yeah, yeah, that's me, I'm visual. If I don't see it, I'm like, what are you talking about? It's not a real thing.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, yeah, I don't know, maybe we're quite a visual culture, right? Mm-hmm. Devices and things like that. And so, so let's say then, okay, you're able to access, you know, the lead out, you know, the understanding of, you know, four more of the students. So you got 6 out of 10 now, pretty good. And then there's the cliche, picture is worth 1,000 words, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes I even say a video is worth 1,000 pictures, you know, just to use that, you know, so, mm-hmm. so a video is worth 10,000 words. so anyways, using, you know, our primary sense, which I think is the visual apparatus, right, to access the, you know, occipital lobe, maybe go deeper into the brain by seeing something. And eyes are just extension of brain material neurologically. And so, so seeing it, yeah, instead of just like a, you know, a text, you know, a thesis, you have some diagrams, right? Oh, okay, you know, so that helps. And maybe, but then you're losing 40% of the other, you know, students. And so the third V, I call it visceral, right? Which literally means internal organs, mm-hmm. your viscera, right? Like your liver. But when, I think in vernacular, when we say visceral, oh, such a visceral experience, right? So meaning it's like,
you feel it somewhere.
You feel it. It's more tactile even. Like let's go back to martial arts, right? You explain, okay, you know, the technique is, you know, lifting your hand out and up, you know, laterally, and then to prepare the movement, part A, point A, and then maybe I'm just explaining, okay, lift up your left arm up and to the left laterally, and then that's point A. Point B is then moving it medially across your body down and to the right, you know?
I have to get people, out of that. If you just do that,
yeah.
I'm like, okay.
But if I say, okay, that and, you know, or if I don't say anything, right, maybe just visual, and I say, right, and a visual learner may immediately catch it, but then combination, right, synergistic, you know, V1 plus V2, you know, verbal plus visual, maybe, okay, as you, you know, prepare the movement, you're lifting your left palm above and lateral, and then when you actually execute the movement, from point A to point B, it looks like this, you know, ends up on medially across your body, right? And you repeat that a few times, you know, up and out, down and across, right? And, you know, and oh, okay, much more transmission, right? And then, but some people, maybe they still don't quite get it. So I guess there's two parts of the visceral. It's almost the action and interaction, right? So, okay, stand up. Okay, everyone lift their arm. Okay, A, B, you know, and then you kind of do corrections. But then this is the application part. In martial, right, a lot of the movements aren't just a solo form, right? Okay, all right, you know, your opponent, okay, your partner lifts up their arm, yeah? And then actually the movement is to like slap the arm. So if I imagine your right arm, it's like, okay, right, right? I feel the function of it, maybe to turn someone's body like this. And then as my partner, you feel the result of it. And then we switch roles, right? Mm-hmm. So there's like visceral and then like reciprocal visceral, right? And then I found, you know, like in, and I did that for acupuncture too, right? You can't just talk about the points, but okay, you actually have to stick the needle in, right? For anything, learning tea, you know, wood carving, you know, motorcycle riding, right? The three Vs, I think, can be mapped into any kind of transmission. And usually you get at least, you know, 80% sort of like transmission of at least, you know, and then you need to repeat it. Right, over time, right? Mm-hmm. So, but some mixture of the three, I think, is a more potent formula for like an educational context, yeah. So that's what I would say to, as my first frame that I found from, especially my first decade of teaching was mainly as a martial arts. And then at my second decade is a little bit more teaching healing and Chinese medicine mainly. And this third decade adding more like, you can call it self-care cultivation, a little bit more spiritual principles into my kind of offerings. Yeah, but I use that 3V model, I think, in most of what I teach. Yeah.
I put everything I've learned into my courses. They're on my website, how to feel better, how to communicate better, how to relate better. If I feel better, I can do the other two. And often when people say something that upsets me or triggers me or something happens or just life in general first thing I do is turn to feel better, whether it's breath work or meditation or mindfulness, watching my thoughts, or doing something physical like exercise or the cold or hot or whatever it is. But a whole list of amazing tools that I had no idea, and I used to suffer a lot when I didn't have them. And then once I can calm myself, well, then I can communicate better. I can catch myself before I say something hurtful, or I can learn how to ask for what I need, or I can learn how to communicate with people around me so that I'm more likely to get my needs met. And this helps immensely in all my relationships. I can be the one, I am the one who's the healthy one, who's the one that knows how to relate and relates in a healthy way. I'm not the one who's the rageaholic or the maniac who's destroying the relationship and constantly doing the toxic, dysfunctional behavior. And so if we have these skills, we can all be that one. And then this whole toxic living, toxic relating, toxic communicating can fall by the wayside because we don't have to do it anymore because we've learned a better way. And this system that we're in here, they don't want us to know a better way. They don't want us coming back together. They don't want us feeling better because then we're not going to buy their stuff. They need us poor and sick and fat and unhealthy in order to do all that. Whereas if we feel better and we're able to communicate better and relate better, we don't need them. We can build a better world where we steward and take care of this place and each other, and everyone benefits, even the supposed powers that be. They will benefit by joining our communities, but we have to first say no to them and learn how to empower ourselves, reclaim our power. So I put that all into my courses. Come on my websites, Clay Schmitz and clayisland.com. Both of them, it's all there. Sign up today or come do a one-on-one person and let's get going. Let's help each other feel better, communicate better, and relate better. Thank you so much.
I love it. It before the camera started, I told the story of how when I got into Kung Fu,
yeah,
like in my 30s maybe, and,
yeah,
and the teacher asked me how I learned, and I had to think about it for a minute.
Yeah.
I came up, well, okay, first I see it, you know,
yeah,
and then
visual,
I have
yeah
it be explained,
mm-hmm,
and then I have to do it, like the feel it part, the visceral.
Visceral.
Find out, I usually find out I miss some part, I get stuck somewhere,
yeah,
then it has to be explained again. Eventually I get all the way through it, and now I've got all the thing, but I have to repeat it to have it be muscle memory and automatic.
Yeah.
And so that's, it seems like it ties in. It's some universal thing we just crossed here where independently we arrived at the same place that you can't, you know, like in modern school where say you sit down for six hours and you're just talked at.
Right, like, talked at.
Like how much are they actually learning? Or
right,
like somebody said, you don't teach anybody, but you can show them anything. As in, just demonstrate, here's what you do, or here, like, I'm curious, like an acupuncture, did you have to actually feel a needle on yourself in order to really get, like, hit the right meridian or point, or like, you know, that kind of thing? Like, did you need, like for me, martial arts, one of the guides is like, for each move as a marker, like let's say you're doing jiu-jitsu and you're gonna do some kind of grapple, like you would feel it, like eyes closed, okay, when the arm here or leverage or whatever is in a certain place, it's not, I don't see it,
right,
I don't think about it, I just feel it. Like somebody put their hand there and I'm like, oh, okay, that's the move for you know, whatever it is. But it's, so that's the, when it's really ingrained.
I love
so
that.
I'm curious, you know.
That's almost like interoception is being able to like see within your body. It's related to proprioception and kinesthetics. And then also what you're talking about is the interaction of that, right? Through the tactile sense in space, time, right? In space through time, right? Or in time through space, with interactive, and we don't live, we're not the only human, so of course the interaction part is very important, and in a martial context, but I think it's also life, is like you're developing a sort of movement database, and so another model maybe I'll throw out is like, and this is true when you're learning driving, when you're learning dance, okay, so I think I call it feed, read, deed, another acronym, so say you learn all the solo movements, right? All how to do it in the air by yourself as a form. Then when you're sparring, right? Or doing an avocation with a partner, like level one, maybe like, you know what I'm gonna do. Maybe throw a right roundhouse. So it's an invariable, right? You know, it's just timing. Okay, you have to know timing and distance, but you know, as your training partner, I'm just gonna throw a right roundhouse and in slow motion. That's the feed, right? And as the eater, if you will, I'm feeding you this this sort of trigger, right, or this image even, to train your database of what to do if this attack comes. And if you do nothing, maybe you get your tooth knocked out, right? And the opponent's not going to pay for your dental, right? So so ideally you have some insurance, but you know, like the insurance at that moment is maybe like a, you know, like a block or something like that. So the feed is coming, the cause, right? And then you're training a optimal response, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously you don't want to just like jump in, that's not optimal, or maybe hide, right? So I say, okay, rather than it hitting my face, you know, this feed is going to do that. I see the trajectory. I read, right, the consequences if I do nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of breaking a teeth or a jaw, it costs thousands of dollars, I learn maybe a movement like this, you know, like to clear that, right? And instead of their fist hitting, you know, the metacarpals, knuckles hitting my temporal mandibular joint, right, I use my, you know, radius and ulna to block their, you know, their arm, right? And so I see the feed, I read, oh, what is this? Okay, this is their right arm coming in this outside in trajectory. And the deed is I choose from my vocabulary of solo movement, say I know 100 movements, right? Mm. Not this one, this is the one that is the optimal response, the shape in a way, to occupy that space so that that, you know, energy and matter doesn't attack me. So. And then the next level is to do it faster, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the next level is, okay, maybe the other arm. You don't know if I'm gonna use the right arm or the left arm. Add a variable, right? Mm-hmm. Et cetera, right? And then you maybe add, you know, I can do a low strike and, you know, four variables. And then you just have to, you know, read which feed it is and do the optimal deed. And maybe that gets, you know, you get good at that, add multiple attackers, or you add, a simulated weapon, yeah? And so it's a kind of somatopsychic training in this context to develop your ability to read situations, right? To choose in a stressful situation, what is the optimal resolution, right? In this simulated, you know, very primal self-defense situation. And then you gotta repeat, yeah. And so I like to say, you know, mastery, you know, everyone wants to ideally, you know, have some form of progress towards their inherent, you know, self-mastery actualized. Mastery is advancement of the basics, right? Which require a high quantity of high quality repetitions. Mm-hmm. The word repetition, right? Like, mm-hmm. Not a low quantity of high quality repetitions. I did it perfectly 3 times. Mm. Or I did 1,000 reps, but they were super low quality, right? So the formula is high quality, meaning do it as correct as you can, you know, 10,000 times. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to ingrain it in your system. Or, like I said, with education, to bring out, right, to actualize the potential that you carry as this amazing hardware, software, spiritual, material being. And so, yeah, I think that's necessary. The repetition part, now, if I hone in on that a little bit, is that, you know, there's this kind of avoidance of boredom, right? Like, I'm bored, yeah. Actually, I would say in order to get to mastery, you have to train until you're a little bit bored. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, okay. It's like it's in there so deep, and even in your subconscious, that it's more automatic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so like boredom and repetition, like I've had students come in, this guy is a fighter. He's like, hey, Sifu, you know, can you teach me? I got this competition, you know, coming. I was like, first of all, I'm not your Sifu yet. Yeah. You're just first class, man. You know, like Sifu is a big burden for me. You know, like, I don't know if I want to adopt you yet, man. And I don't teach like for fighting competition. Anyways, like I just said, okay, let me teach you something from my system. And after like 2 minutes, I look back and he's just standing there, you know? And I'm like, oh, I got it. You know, like show me the next thing, you know? And I'm like, and then I tested him, like he didn't, you know? Like,
he had it?
He didn't.
He did not.
He thought he did. Yeah. And so a little bit of tough love, say, no, like do it 100 more times and mm-hmm. let's see. And you know, that's the whole elder thing. It's like someone who's able to have the skill, embody the skill, and then be able to even call out and have a bit of tough love and say, no, you don't have. Not like, oh, perfect. Yeah, you know, yeah, let me show you something else. Please stay, you know, like, because I want your tuition or something like that, you know. So
or like a 5-year-old might need that, but when you're in your 30s, like,
right. Meet me at least halfway, man, you know, like I don't want to hold your hand, you know, but and these are all considerations, like, you know, the teacher-student relationship, you know, like responsibility and even like the ethical part, and yeah, and then yeah, how to handle, you know, you have a group of 20 students, you know, mm-hmm. maybe different levels, you know, how do you speak to a group, right? It's one thing if you have one-on-one,
right?
How do you, what's different. The pedagogy of speaking to a group of different personalities and backgrounds and attitudes, and it's a challenge, yeah. So
when I discover the truth, I want to shout it from the rooftops. That's why I wrote 3 books: Unlearning to Remember, The Flying Lyris, and Breakup is the Beginning. Available on Amazon, on my website, on Spotify, you can get the audiobook, and on Audible, you can also get the audiobook. We've been told a bunch of nonsense, a pack of lies. And they're not innocent lies like the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus or something like this. No, these are drink this poison, it's good for you kind of lies. So these people are nasty, and we need to do something different. So let's wake up together. Help me, support me in this mission to educate everyone around me. And even though my family arrogantly fights me in learning this, once we learn the truth, it's only good. It only helps. It only improves our lives. I mean, how can not taking poison and learning how to help ourselves and take care of ourselves and take care of our kids, how can that possibly harm? That can only do good. Learning how to take care of this earth and how to build community, come back together, how to steward this place. This is only good stuff. This can only help. So I wrote The Flying Lyris for the kids. It's a story about, we're told that a new boogeyman is on the scene and only the potion from the rulers can save us. Where have we heard that story? Unlearning to Remember, that was when I woke up after my first divorce and learned about community and about how this place used to be and our ancestral ways and how much better this place can be if we know how to take care of each other. And then Breakup is the Beginning. It's all about my divorces and my losses and how they truly were the beginning. Is that's what originally woke me up. It was in that desperation that I was tired and done and ready to ask for help and willing to do whatever to build a better life. And I have, and it's amazing. And so get them on my website at clayonland.com or Amazon or Audible or Spotify. Thanks so much for your support.
Well, I love what I love about martial arts is you get instant feedback, whether it works or not. Either you get your ass, like you said, you get hit in the jaw, lose a tooth, or you block it and you're fine.
Yeah.
And we could say even with the healing arts,
yeah,
you right. either try a treatment and you feel better or you don't.
Right.
And then where it gets nuanced is you know, like with the history lesson, somebody can tell you a lesson, you have no idea if it's true or not.
Yeah.
It's difficult to discern. So you could get fed a lot of BS without knowing it. But,
true.
You know, with martial arts and instant feedback.
Yeah.
And with the healing arts, when we get into, you know, like the way the pharma system works and system suppression, it gets a little more nuanced that, like,
true.
Okay, my pain went away, but did I actually get to the root of the issue? So did I actually learn something or get better? Or is it just a temporary thing and then it's going to come back worse? And so
that's huge,
I don't know if we want to speak to that, the difference between actually learning and maybe some halfway or think you learn, and then you find out 20 years later, like, I got sold a bill of goods. Damn it. You know, I got.
Yeah, and it's true. And we bring up martial arts and medicine. That's kind of maybe our overlap. But, you know, it's true. Like, I just thought of it. Like, there's like these dating coaches, too, or like, you know, these coaches, like, you know, that teach you how to, you know, talk to women, get the girl, right? Okay, all the three, but you go to, you know, wherever you meet the girls, you know, supermarket or farmer's market, and then it's like, oh shit, like, it didn't work, you know, like, so they call it your game, right? So go back to the drawing board, or really, you know, did you really learn the principle, or do you embody it, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it like, you know, more sort of just mental and theoretical, and you can talk a good game, right? Mm-hmm. And I've met, for instance, in Chinese medicine, you know, context, like, oh, there's this famous teacher, you know, whatever, PhD, you know, mentor, you know, from China, whatever, yeah. And you take their workshop, or like for me, I was in school and I interned with them, and they can lecture for, I was going to say hours, for semesters on all the, you know, classical texts and like what it means, you know, to the nuance, you know. And then amazing top level theoretician, right? And then, okay, clinic time, you know, after whatever, you know, same day, afternoon, or, you know, part two of the semester, okay, we're gonna go into the clinic. And then something is found lacking, you know, because all this talk, whether it's herbal, right? Herbal, you can do this herb and that herb. But after, you know, some days or weeks, I would actually talk to the patient. So how do you feel? You know, how's your shoulders? Like, actually, no, it's still kind of the same. It's like, oh, there's a gap, right? Yeah. And vice versa. Sometimes you have amazing, I'll use a dancing metaphor, right? I was teaching in Sao Paulo. And during the happy hour, you know, evening on the third day with the students, you know, we would go to a bar and there's like dancing. And I'm like, one of the students, remember his name, Marco. He's an amazing, you know, like, I don't know what he was doing. Some kind of like, you know, zouk or samba, I don't know. And I was like, hey, that's amazing. Can you teach me, you know? And so he's basically, oh, come, you know, and he put me on the dance floor, and he's just like, he didn't say anything, right? Just the visual, right? And basically, he was just wanting me to follow him, right? Mm-hmm. An amazing dancer, but I started to use my system of learning, like, okay, I was counting, like, left, right. He's like, no counting, no, just feel, you know, feel. I'm like, oh. So amazing practitioner, but couldn't break it down for me as a beginner. Like, he's like level 10, I'm like level 1 trying to, you know, so there's, he couldn't break down his knowledge into like a curriculum that was digestible for me as a beginner. So there's a saying in martial arts, but it's I learned this from a Chinese medicine teacher. I'll say the Chinese in case there's Chinese speakers, is Li Lun, which means theory. Mei you, without, Shi Jian, practical, right? Shi Jia Gong Fu is false or fake. Gong Fu or martial art. Mm. Gong Fu is like skill, right? Yeah. Which could be in anything, cooking or yeah, singing. Shi Jian, Mei You Li Lun. So the practical without the theoretical, Shi Ben Gong Fu is stupid. It's like dumb skill, right?
They dumb luck or natural
talent. Yeah, or exactly. Or they learned it maybe as a child, right? From their grandpa, but just from spending 50 years with the old man, right? But they cannot teach it. They cannot, like, you know, transmit it, except if you spend 30 years with them, right? Just follow, right? And that's maybe only, like I said, like maybe 20-30% of students, mm-hmm. yeah, will be able to get it like that, yeah. So if efficacy of transmission or higher percentage transmission, then it's not very efficacious. So just theory is sort of lame or fake, right? Skill, and just practical is kind of just, you know, just like, you know, just like a jock, you know, like bootkin, you know, like kind of like stereotypically, right? Not able to teach it in a you know, more broken down way. And so, 时间理论, the two of them together is 真功夫, 是真功夫, is real skill. It's like whole skill where I'm doing something, and if you say, oh, Sifu, what was that? Oh, okay, let me break it down for you. Okay, the shoulder does this, the elbow does this, and I can use the three Vs to transmit it to you. I can break it down that way. Yeah, and so that's just a little kind of short story or like an aphorism that both are necessary. Yeah. Yeah, so sometimes it's fun, you know, to understand a topic from another language, right? Because each language has a different perspective. So in Chinese, when we say study, you have 学 and 习. 学 means learn, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like collecting information, right? And then 习 is like to practice or to drill it, right? 学 and 习. So study, to study something effectively, you need to both 学 and 习, right? And another Chinese medicine teacher said that often, you know, we just learn to practice. You know, that's maybe the how or even the what, right? And he would sometimes flip it, say, practice to learn. Mm. Right, so through the, again, repetition, through the drilling, through the exercise, through, that's why I use the term somatopsychic. Everyone knows psychosomatic, right? Mm-hmm. But that to me is literally mind-body, mm-hmm. right? Well, let me think about being positive. Maybe I'll act positive, you know? Whereas somatopsychic is reverse, is like, just, even if you can only do it at 5%, you know, like fake it till you make it kind of thing, mm. yeah, like do your best to embody it maybe at 5%. To then gain experience and confidence to then realize, oh, wow, okay, I can actually be whatever, more confident or more skillful. So 学 and 习 are this kind of combination. And so if I mentioned the word collect. So that's like information or data, right? which we are very good at now with AI, you can collect so much information, which is one step up from raw data, but it's just basic information that you really cannot use, right? So even along that trajectory of data, raw data, basic information, that's not enough. The next step, if I use another C word, is from collect to connect, right? Those 10 points of information, can you actually combine them together, right? And so then the data becomes information, which is a rough formation, right? Information, not just random bits of data. But then more usable, more kind of structure is then knowledge, right? Which then you also can refine further. And so the third C is correct, right? Collect, connect, correct, refine. Go back to your teacher, right? Get find the elder, right? To say, no, that's not quite right. Oh, really? Or like you said, actually try it, right? And then
figure out where you're stuck.
Yeah, and make the corrections. And then maybe you'll actually go to the next step, which is like wisdom, right? So data, you know, information, knowledge, wisdom. And in a spiritual sense, there's even further like almost like gnosis, right? Which is almost like going where it becomes more like unconscious competence. You don't have to think about how to do the martial arts combination. It's just like, boom, whoa. All right, the person is, I don't know how it, right? That's like gnosis, where it's like, it's kind of, you're more integral. All the mental, emotional, physical, even spiritual functions kind of just happen more automatically. That's a high level of mastery. So from a cultural standpoint, and also, you know, which is kind of my background, but also testing it out, like I said in a previous episode, in over 20 countries with thousands, if not tens of thousands of students, it's been quite an interesting journey. Like also the simultaneity of learning and teaching, right?
Yeah.
Every time you teach, especially, you know, even some of the more challenging students, like, okay, Dr. Wang, what about this? I was like, oh, never thought about that. Because you know? In my learning path, maybe they're at year 5 of their learning, or even year 30, whatever. I never asked that question, you know? And so the beauty of teaching is that people ask questions that maybe never came up on your path, right? And so what's beautiful is you learn from those questions. And that's part of the reason why when I teach, I don't like to teach everything all at once or answer questions too soon. Because then you preempt the golden opportunity for them to learn directly from their own mistakes. If they ask me a question, I say, you know what, like, you cook a little, 5 more minutes, okay? If you really can't answer, then come to me, you know? But sometimes in that 5 minutes, they figure it out, they're like, so, and then they get it, right? But if I prematurely try to say, oh, I'm so wise, let me, then I may have to explain it 20 times before they get it.
Or they might not get it their way.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, in their own way.
Their way might be beautiful.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of a community, right? A living community where it's not just top-down. Right? And maybe there is a chief or elder, but a lot of flexibility for dyadic and triadic, you know, kind of mixture of different levels and experiences, yeah. Sometimes the lineage actually innovates and can sort of perpetuate because of a fresh perspective that a beginner brings in, right? Otherwise it can get like kind of, you know, crusty and codified.
That's beautiful. As you were talking, I was reminded of I started teaching wing foiling, which is it's a new sport,
right?
So I didn't have anything to draw on. I had to make it up as I went, and first thing I noticed is I really learned when I had to figure out how to teach it,
right?
Because I was like, well, I can do the thing, but how do I explain it, or even what are the steps? Yeah. And again, no like history to know, you know, so it was really trippy.
Yeah.
And it kept it fresh. Like all of a sudden it was super exciting to teach something that I'd done a million times and I was bored to death of, but now I got to show it to somebody else. Like all of a sudden it made it exciting. So I think some of that crustiness you're talking about, it goes away when you have to teach or maybe somebody who's a difficult student, you have to come up with some new way to like show this person or get through whatever trauma or defense is there keeping, you know, like.
Which enhances then your
understanding. The whole thing gets bigger. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I don't know if I said it, but like I found I really, really, really learn something by teaching it. That's, you really want to learn something, try to teach it, you know?
Oh man, yeah. And in a way that, you know, I forget who it was, Einstein, or I don't know, probably a misquote, but like, you know, part of, you know, mastery, again, to use that term, is like the ability to understand it so deeply that you can make it as simple as possible, but not any simpler. Because you don't want to go to simplistic. To me, simple is like where you refine it to its essence, right, without unnecessary complication. But simplistic is where you cross over, is you start to take out some essential parts. You know, so simplicity holds the whole system in its most refined, distilled essence. And then, therefore, it's simple in the way that you can transmit it, but very deep, very nutritious, right? In one tincture drop. So simplistic is where you start to dilute it, in other words, you know, where you're losing some of the medicine in it. Because there's a lot of people maybe in the middle stage of their mastery or teaching where they can teach it, but it's, they make it so complicated. And only certain people can get it, you know, 20% of people. And that's fine, you know. But I think, again, not to say I'm there, but what I've seen, where I would like to get to is where I can open up and really even just like be a vessel to transmit. And ultimately, it's not even what you say. Like you watch this podcast, like, okay, you know, like 5 minutes later, you forgot what we said. But it's like, wow, there was something there, you know, like some energy or some presence that was nutritious or delicious or special. And then, yeah, maybe that inspires you, you know, to do whatever it is, parenting or whatever it is, engineering, or you don't have to do martial arts like we do, you know, that it inspires you to aspire, you know, to actualize your full potential. Yeah, so it's not just the what you do. Yeah, why you do it's important. Okay, I do yoga. Why? Oh, to get in shape. I do yoga because for spiritual, you know, illumination. And then also the how, you know, the practice of it. And then ultimately, I think it's the who. Yeah, you can be a badass yogi, but still be an asshole.
Like what's the point? You know, you're missing something huge if that's
right. The who, right? Hopefully, you become a little bit, you know, less mean and a little bit more self-loving, and you know, like your presence helps to, you know, smooth out the world. You know, first your maybe friend and family, etc. I think that's the most important type of education. Call it spiritual or whatever, but like, you know, like, because everything else ultimately is more just like, you know, modalities or technical. I think, and at least for myself, like I teach many things, but my aspiration now as a teacher and also as a learner too is like just to focus on who I'm becoming. Is it more aligned to someone else's story or meaning, or is it becoming being, like the essence of what I really am, what I came here to share? Am I kind of exuding that kind of depth or authenticity? I guess that's the current kind of catchphrase. Yeah, I think that's most important.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, I will wrap it up here in a second, I just wanted to add something that I've noticed recently in introducing my son to martial arts, and he's taking karate. And all of my martial arts training up until then has been about street fighting and being able to protect myself. Like, I never thought of it as performance or getting the belt or anything. I just want to like be safe when shit goes down. I want to be okay. That was it. And so I always approached it that way.
Yeah.
Picked a teacher that way.
Yes.
And so we're doing these katas in karate, and it didn't feel realistic. I'm like, I'm never going to do this on the street.
Okay.
And then somebody said to me, well, you're great at the martial part. You've got that part. Now it's time to learn the arts part.
The art part,
and it just like hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, oh shit, I've been missing this whole other, it's an art, it's performance, it's play, it's theater.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, wow, you know, just, so now it's like fresh again. And I'm like, you know, the joy of teaching my son and seeing these little kids have a blast, and who cares if it's street fighting or realistic, are they having fun? Yeah, okay, we're doing a good job.
I love that because, you know, the art part is you're learning a skill in the martial context, but the art part is what's transferable to the rest of your life. And even as a martial artist for like 30 years, it's like 99.99999% of the time, I don't use it to like, you know, defend against roundhouse punches. I use it as like for psychological stability, neurological regulation, how I breathe, how I ground, which helps me when I'm, you know, almost in the opposite of a self protection or self-defense context. When I'm in a self-healing context as a doctor, it helps, you know. And doctor by the doctere, actually, and back to how we started, actually means to teach.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
A doctor should teach, right? Oh,
you hear that, doctors? Please start teaching.
Not just prescribe, right?
Right, right. Wow.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Well, perfect. So, well, let's tell the people you know, what they can learn from you or what you're teaching.
Thank you. Thank you.
How to find you.
Yeah, so website is daocenter, daocenter.com. I also have a Substack, Daology, Daology. And then also Instagram, I also share some events or ideas there, which is instagram.com/, I use my martial title, Sifu, S-I-F-U, Paul Wang, P-A-U-L-W-A-N-G. Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you, Kurt.
All right, I'll put my stuff in there too. And so either one of us, you want to reach out or, you know, do something fun together or events. And
Go, go wing.
Both teaching. Why not? We'll kick some ass and do some surfing, you know.
Love it.
Something.
Yeah.
Anyway,
thank you so much.
Super fun. Thank you for sharing, Paul.
Appreciate it.
Look forward to next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you.
I put everything I've learned into my courses. They're on my website. How to feel better, how to communicate better, how to relate better. If I feel better, I can do the other two. And often when people say something that upsets me or triggers me or something happens or just life in general, first thing I do is turn to feel better, whether it's breath work or meditation or mindfulness, watching my thoughts or doing something physical like exercise or the cold or hot or whatever it is. But a whole list of amazing tools that I had no idea, and I used to suffer a lot when I didn't have them. And then once I can calm myself, well, then I can communicate better. I can catch myself before I say something hurtful, or I can learn how to ask for what I need, or I can learn how to communicate with people around me so that I'm more likely to get my needs met. And this helps immensely in all my relationships. I can be the one, I am the one who's the healthy one, who's the one that knows how to relate and relates in a healthy way. I'm not the one who's the rageaholic or the maniac who's destroying the relationship and constantly doing the toxic, dysfunctional behavior. And so if we have these skills, we can all be that one. And then this whole toxic living, toxic relating, toxic communicating can fall by the wayside because we don't have to do it anymore because we've learned a better way. And this system that we're in here, they don't want us to know a better way. They don't want us coming back together. They don't want us feeling better because then we're not going to buy their stuff. They need us poor and sick and fat and unhealthy in order to do all that. Whereas if we feel better and we're able to communicate better and relate better, we don't need them. We can build a better world where we steward and take care of this place and each other, and everyone benefits, even the supposed powers that be. They will benefit by joining our communities, but we have to first say no to them and learn how to empower ourselves, reclaim our power. So I put that all into my courses. Come on my websites, Clay Schmitz and clayisland.com. Both of them, it's all there. Sign up today or come to a one-on-one person and let's get going. Let's help each other feel better, communicate better, and relate better. Thank you so much. When I discover the truth, I want to shout it from the rooftops. That's why I wrote 3 books, Unlearning to Remember, The Flying Lyris, and Breakup is the Beginning. Available on Amazon, on my website, on Spotify, you can get the audiobook, and on Audible, you can also get the audiobook. We've been told a bunch of nonsense, a pack of lies. And they're not innocent lies like the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus or something like this. No, these are drink this poison, it's good for you kind of lies. So these people are nasty and we need to do something different. So let's wake up together. Help me, support me in this mission to educate everyone around me. And even though my family arrogantly fights me in learning this, once we learn the truth, it's only good. It only helps. It only improves our lives. I mean, how can not taking poison and learning how to help ourselves and take care of ourselves and take care of our kids, how can that possibly harm? That can only do good. Learning how to take care of this earth and how to build community, come back together, how to steward this place. This is only good stuff. This can only help. So I wrote The Flying Lyris for the kids. It's a story about, we're told that a new boogeyman is on the scene and only the potion from the rulers can save us. Where have we heard that story? Unlearning to Remember, that was when I woke up after my first divorce and learned about community and about how this place used to be and our ancestral ways and how much better this place can be if we know how to take care of each other. And then Breakup is the Beginning. It's all about my divorces and my losses and how they truly were the beginning. That's what originally woke me up. It was in that desperation that I was tired and done and ready to ask for help and willing to do whatever to build a better life. And I have, and it's amazing. And so get them on my website at clayonan.com or Amazon or Audible or Spotify. Thanks so much for your support.